Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hi, I'm Richard Doherty, founder and CEO of Scale Up Consulting and author of Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. And I believe that in order to stay ahead of the competition, you have to have a digital first mindset. And today on the show, we're going to be chatting to Gary. Gary is the Chief Innovation Officer at Warricle. Welcome to the show, Gary. Really excited to jump into this conversation with you today.
Hi, great to be here, Richard. Thank you for having me.
Brilliant. And folks, as always, I like to give you a bird's eye view of the discussion. Yes, we are talking about digital transformation. And in all honesty, I go to client meetings day in, day out. I go down the pub, not day in, day out, but often. And the word on everyone's lips is digital and digital transformation. And the rise of fintech companies and solutions over the past few years has, you know, in my view, has led to a completely new and transformed financial services landscape, changing customer expectations. There's, you know, right now, Gary and folks out there, there's the pressure to even streamline operations. And there's other factors that are really driving the push to reinvent and also innovate on a continuous basis. And I believe that this impacts all types of organizations, from the 100-year-old banks to insurance providers, and even, you know, the fintech startups that have only been around in the last decade. Digital transformation, that journey is challenging, right? There's more to it than the tech. We need to think about how we shed old habits, how we update cultural norms, maybe upskill our employees, adjust the way of thinking to become a digital business and also a digital leader. And honestly, I believe that, you know, it's a skill to be able to connect the dots between a digital initiative, a strategy, and also an enabling that in a business so you can get an outcome. And right now, you know, I was just talking to Gary before we jumped into the show, it's even more important to understand how to do this. There's players out there that are investing heavily in tech and also in the fintech and financial ecosystem. Apple has just launched a new BNPL service. JP Morgan, as we know, has been heavily investing into this space for the last few years. And right now, Citibank, amongst others, are looking at ways to transform not only the operations, but also their front end that interacts with their consumers. So, you know, a poignant time to talk about this. And let's get Gary into the show. And I think let's kick off with what I think is most probably the most critical part of this. It's the mindset part of it. And Gary, what do you think financial services companies can do to shift their thinking from where they are now to becoming a digital leader and a digital business?
Yeah, I mean, I think great intro and covered so many key topics in there already. I think is that shift that I think many businesses and in particular in financial services need to make. I think it's important to recognize that what we need to some extent undo is many decades of very traditional management thinking. You know, we're moving from a world where efficiency is absolutely key to driving a business forward in a world where, you know, if you look at the kind of socioeconomic environment just now, our ability to respond really quickly to changing customers' needs and changing business needs, I think that's the key thing. And, you know, if I'm honest, the term digital transformation, you know, I think it's become quite polluted, it's quite vague. But for me, that's what it is. It's about, it's not about a project, it's not about an initiative to change into something brand new there and then. It's about how to develop the ongoing skills, the management practices, the leadership kind of thinking and vision, all the way down to the practices on the ground to develop really exciting, valuable, meaningful products and services for your customers. So that's not something, as I say, that's a project. It's not an initiative. You know, this is actually an ongoing mindset. It's an ongoing culture. So really what I think we're talking about is within our organizations, how can we get really good at having a growth mindset? How can we get really good at seeking out and acting on feedback from our customers, from our business? And how can we create an environment really that attracts people that want to think more broadly in this kind of way? You know, people who are willing to not be as confined by the boundaries of technology or strategy or design. You know, how you bring those three things together, really that's an organization's kind of DNA. You know, some will dial up slightly more on the tech, some slightly more on the strategy, some slightly more on design. But ultimately, it's how you blend those things together rather than have everything streamlined for 100%. Well, you could never have 100%, yeah. But, you know, complete efficiency.
I like it. And I like that because let's take an example. Corporates, growth mindset in a corporate world is maybe not as synonymous as a growth mindset in a startup or a scale-up, let's be honest, right? And I think, you know, that growth mindset, but what does that growth mindset look like in a startup or a scale-up? And, you know, to coin a phrase, it's fail fast, right? You got to fail fast, and then you got to learn from that and you got to move on. But in the corporate setting, it's slightly different though, isn't it? So, I mean, you know, you and I have worked in corporates and, you know, some of our clients are corporates. And pitch in here. I mean, my feeling is that it's more about success. Because success, what does success give you as an individual? Yeah. I'm not talking about a company, I'm just talking about an individual. It gives you a promotion. It gives you a bonus. It gives you some other freedoms that maybe you didn't have last year or last month. Whereas if you've gone in and you've looked at it from a growth mindset and you failed, and failing is not a bad thing, by the way, then you might not get the promotion. You might not get that bonus. You might not get that increased salary. So, boom, you know, this is a big shift for older companies, right, to take on that growth mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things I've kind of observed, I don't know if you've seen anything similar, Richard, but certainly over the last kind of 10, 15 years, I think one of the biggest challenges, especially in the enterprise space, is identifying when to outsource and when to internalize. And I think that growth mindset is particularly important where it's something you need to internalize because it's a core strategic competence. You know, that efficiency stuff that I mentioned before, that is still very, very important. And I think sometimes these kind of conversations become very polarized about internalize all the capabilities and everything should be growth minded and forget efficiency. Or in other cases, it's offshore everything because we think that's efficient. Yeah. And, you know, let's move away and focus on cost thinking. But to be honest, there's a place for both. Perhaps an example of that is a website these days. There are very few businesses out there that don't have a website. You know, it's probably not the competitive advantage that many businesses think it is. So is that something where you want to tie up many people, many designers, strategists, and technologists within your organization focusing on that? Or is that something that actually is quite effectively outsourced if you give really clear constraints and guidance on what needs to happen? Similarly, if you've got something that is perhaps going to propel your business, it's a real bleeding edge capability, it's something brand new to the market, it's a world first, something that's never been done before, then it makes sense to have that growth mindset. And if you're not failing in that type of environment, you're probably not pushing the boundaries quite hard enough. So I think that focus on where to outsource and how to outsource effectively versus where to insource and double down on all of your strong internal capabilities to focus on that core strategy, I think that's an important conversation.
I think you touched on a great point there. Where do you focus, right? And, you know, let's be honest here. A website is a channel, just as LinkedIn is a channel, just as everything's a channel. So if for whatever reason, a website in your example is not, maybe in you're in logistics, you know, I'm just saying logistics, and you know, the website traffic is going to be low because actually everything is done. What? It's done on the phone, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's what it's done in logistics, and you know, sort of trade finance, it's done on a phone, right? Everything's done on a phone, sort of the old school way. So why focus on that? And why focus on that internally? And you're right, then shift that outside so someone can focus and someone can do it. And obviously you have a view out there. But also if you're looking at management specifically and you're looking at enterprise and maybe companies that are moving up the ladder, it's not a bad thing to fail, right? It's also not a bad thing to get in different types of people with different types of backgrounds into leadership positions that start changing the course and direction because they've had different experiences. And that's also a growth mindset. You want a new path, a different path to what you're trotting on now, right now.
Yeah.
So you're hiring someone slightly different. I remember maybe 15 years ago, maybe a bit longer, Deutsche Bank brought in someone from a totally different background, I think it was FMCG background, into their trading world and to build out their single dealer trading platform. Okay. And everyone was like, well, what the hell? Why is this happening, right? And the reason that was happening was because they wanted someone that had a very different experience, could touch the customers, understand the customers, and build out a platform that was customer-centric. And lo and behold, it was difficult culturally for a lot of people. But over the course of time, actually, I can't remember what the name of the single dealer trader platform was, but that became the benchmark system to follow, right? I think there's different ways to skin a cat here if you look outside the box, but also want to look outside the box, right?
Yeah. Definitely. And you know, I think you touched on it a little while ago when we started speaking, you know, essentially about identities. Organizations, any entity, and especially humans, we've got different identities in different situations. You know, if you come to me right at the point when my daughter's fallen and skinned her knee, you're going to be speaking to Gary the daddy. You're probably not going to get a huge amount of, you know, interesting conversation about digital transformation. And that's assuming there's ever any interesting chat about digital transformation from me. But you know, in that moment, I'm a dad. In a different moment, I'm a leader. In a different moment, I'm, you know, in a past life, I'm a developer. And each of these different identities, they've got different challenges, different things that considering and weighing up different priorities. And it's one thing to have an organizational vision and to say, this is where we're going, this is who we are, this is what we think we want to do for our customers and the impact we want to have in the world. And creating the psychological safety and the comfort for people to openly and willingly accept different perspectives coming in, different persuasions. Really, I think one of the most challenging things, especially in a remote world, is how do you go on a change direction or how do you become something else when you don't have that close face time? And you know, how do you especially take away the feeling among anyone of something being a challenge or a criticism of where we've been? You know, you've only ever gotten to that position of being able to change or being able to look to the future and do the next thing because of the incredible work that's gone before. Mm. You know, every organization is ideally defined and suited to the outcomes that they currently get, you know. So assuming that the business is still running and strong and going well, everyone's done a phenomenal job to get to that point. You know, so how can you de-risk those feelings of challenge, those feelings of criticism, which generally speaking aren't there, and create an environment where people can open up to new thought, new perspectives, try new things. The other side of that coin, of course, is not everybody will ever be able to get to that point. And, you know, how can you, I think one of the key things around that psychological safety is how can you make sure that there is still a place for those people? How can they contribute effectively to the organizational direction without necessarily being forced into a position of uncomfort and to do things that they don't want to do? So, you know, my experience is there's always a position for people that are in there. You know, if people want to contribute, they want to push forward and help the organization, the journey, it's there. It's just about finding the right people for a particular type of change or a particular type of thinking to really help you propel your organization forward.
Yeah, I like it. I like that way of thinking. And You know, I always say to my clients, always, you know, when we go on a journey together, and generally there's always digital involved in it, in whatever way you look at it, right? So whether it's Zoom calls, whether it's LinkedIn, whether it's figuring out a new sales funnel, or whatever it is, always digital involved in it.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
But I always say this, I mean, ultimately, we have moved on from the information age. We are not there anymore. We're in the age of what? We're in the age of connectiveness, right? Yeah. And if we can, as leaders, show our troops the way forward, then we empower them. And yeah. I always like to look at it like this. I mean, you know, look at it by using the LRC triangle, which I talk about with my clients all the time. Making certain you have the right leadership in place, and those leaders are doing the doing, and making certain that the plans, the strategies, etc., are executed on. You have relationships that are built up, right? Relationships can be many things. It doesn't just have to be employee to employee. It could be employee investors. It could be your public, your customers, whatever it is. But you have to have relationships, right? And the other thing is communication. Without communication, there's nothing. We are individuals. You and I right now are communicating. Yeah, we're communicating using a tool, but we are communicating. Actually, we're forming a relationship. It's a bit weird, right? but that's it. That's the essence of it. And digital is the same, right? We are not forced, but we are bringing people together through different means because we're able to connect with one another. We're leading them, we're building a relationship, we're continuously communicating. And this is the same sort of mechanism that fintechs, that their financial services leaders, et cetera, need to be using day in, day out, right?
Yeah, I love that, Richard. And frankly, 9 times out of 10, the technology piece is the easy piece.
Yeah, exactly. Agreed.
The thing that you talk about there with relationships. For me, when you're looking to evolve a company or digital transformation of any kind, it's relationships are both the most amplifying and probably the most dampening thing to any change program at all. If you have the right people recruited into that effort and they're, you know, really helping you drive forward, that's incredible. But equally, the social connections, the relationships within any enterprise, they've got a reinforcing capability for the status quo. So we could have an incredible conversation about our new vision, our new direction, and how different ways of thinking about our design or our technologies or anything, you know, how that's going to take us forward. And we could be apparently in complete agreement. But then when I go for lunch with my old team and my old team that aren't aligned to that, say, here, Gary, I'll buy you a sandwich. And what do you make of all that stuff that's going on? I'll probably, just through that relationship and that social connection, I'll probably revert back to the Gary from before. So how do you create the opportunity for these new relationships, new ways of thinking, an environment that gives that psychological safety to help amplify and progress you forward rather than just always feeling that pull back to the status quo? I feel
like I need to answer that question.
Go for it.
Because it's a really good question. I myself have sort of, we're changing seats here for a second, folks, but it's all good. I myself have been on a journey, right? And one of the things that that I realized in my journey over the last, you know, 10 odd years of building up my business, Scale Up Consulting, is the one-on-one interactions are brilliant. Like you and I, or client to client, you know, it's brilliant. It's absolutely phenomenal. Love it. You get in there, you get the job done. But also, I realized that, you know, to have a real impact, you have to have a platform where you have one to many. So like we're doing a podcast, and you can then go off and you can do some really cool stuff. And what I call, you can create a movement. You know, I'm sort of starting to create a movement on the FinTech Scaling Show. We're doing some really cool stuff right now. We just hit, I think, number 43 in the US charts of top listen to tech podcasts. So, you know, that's pretty cool, right? But what else? How do you take, you know, this and into the next part, which is, you know, really making certain that the greater mission is full. And, you know, for me, it's community. it's a word that's banded around, but it is community. And you know, right now we have 122 fintech leaders, global fintech leaders inside our, I'm going to say our fintech think tank. And then we've got 347 online participants as well. So nearly 500 leaders around the world. And all of a sudden, this community is coming together once a month to talk about stuff. And now we're going out live to different parts because now is the time to go out live and have these face-to-face conversations that you mentioned. But what I'm saying is that there's digital, yes, but there's also mechanisms to create digital really work across different stages. Yeah. But also then have that face-to-face that you mentioned. In. It creates such a great, you know, it's different. It takes the relationships to a different level. And yeah. If you're able to, on your journey of transforming your business or your industry, develop an inverted commas, it can be whatever community, a community, that community can really propel you to the next level, right?
Yeah, I love that. You know, the communities, that feeling of connectedness and togetherness, exactly. And that common journey is so important. One of the things I've had a huge amount of success with historically, and this is something actually we're doubling down on in Warrickle at the moment, is giving people lived experiences of what it means to participate in a new way is an incredibly powerful thing, partly because of the lived experience, but also partly because of the separation from the old or from the status quo. So to give you a tangible example of that, one of the things that I've done historically is build out, we called it at the time, the product experimentation team. The reason for giving that name, it wasn't because they were doing all the cool stuff, it's because it de-risks things in an enterprise environment. If you call it an experiment, suddenly you get a bit more flexibility to try out new things. And so what we did with this team was this became a truly agile, truly product-centric team, not agile by method, agile by principle, really explorative, co-creative, doing some incredible work. And what we used to do is set a six-week window for this team. And we wouldn't do all the things that many enterprises you would expect, or backlogs and Jira tickets and all this. Yeah. What we said is, here's an opportunity, or here's a challenge that we see in the business. You've got 6 weeks to get a brand new product out there into the market and contributing towards the business. So one of the incredible things with that is, from the very beginning, you know that team is washing its face from a cost perspective.
Yeah.
And you know that you're starting to inject this new kind of thinking and new ways of working. So this team starts from that very early explorative kind of thing, kind of co-creating things like design sprints and various different kind of areas of research and so on, to come up with how has this been solved in different industries in different ways and starting to smash things together. Very quickly transitioning into some very mature technology and ways of working practices. So for example, by the end of week one, they already have that tracer bullet out into production. So they know that they can get product out there and release things. That evolves very quickly. Customers are in and being tested within the first couple of weeks. Quite often by the end of week two or week three, people panic, realize they're doing the wrong thing and take a complete pivot and go a different direction. But every single time, this high-performing product team got brand new product out into the market that's contributing meaningfully. Now, where the key is with this is we then use that environment to bring people from the enterprise in for a lived experience over that six-week period. So they separated out from their existing teams, the existing architectures, the existing ways of working, the existing management structures, and came to a team that was really at the bleeding edge of the practice and the process and the technologies and the ways of thinking about these things. So by the end, what you got was people who were actually, they've experienced what it's like to do these things differently, to behave in a different way. It wasn't just they'd seen the presentation and they couldn't back it up. They had this lived experience. And those people then went on to become the seed points of new teams within that enterprise environment. So they weren't fully qualified after 6 weeks, but they were incredible sensors of, actually, I think we could do this differently. So they knew when to pull in the support that they needed to evolve. So that lived experience, that change in relationships and that way of seeing new things was incredibly powerful.
That is a cool story. And what happened when those folks went back to the enterprise? I mean, my assumption is, you know, daily routines might be altered. Maybe they are unlocking some hidden profits in their business. What was the feedback? What was the outcomes?
It was incredible. I wouldn't want to say that it was a success 100% of the time. There were some people who joined these teams, they couldn't quite get with it and they became disenfranchised. There were other people at the opposite end of the scale who came in being very, very skeptical. And by the end, they were complete converts. You know, they were hook, line, and sinker. in the cases where we got people like that, they became our biggest champions in the enterprise. And bear in mind, this team was operating within the enterprise. So one of the things that we stipulated was that we needed very brave C-suite support to say, no, it's okay, that's the experimentation team. They can try this out. So some of those more challenging middle management layers were much more open and willing because of that very senior level insight. So when people left that team, when they come on the journey and they thought, actually, I'm hook, line, and sinker for this, I love this. Yeah. They had very senior support to connect into, you know, whenever they had challenges. They had other people that had been through that lived experience, which started to become a growing community of people in and of itself. So you got all these strengthening of relationships and practices and ways of working and so on. Yeah, and they were just really, really good at putting the hand up and saying, I think we're going the wrong direction. You know, they knew what good looked like, even though they didn't have all the answers. So some of the teams that started as an outcome of that process were some of the highest performing teams within that enterprise after that. It really was quite cool.
Nice. I like it. And, you know, as we wrap up this part of the show, we get into we get into the fun part, but I'm not allowed to say that anymore because we get into the other parts of the show. What do you want to say to leaders or folks out there right now that are on a journey or on the cusp of a journey into the digital world? Maybe they're transforming the business. Maybe they're updating different parts of their own knowledge in this world. Yeah. What information, what advice would you like to give them?
Well, the first thing, almost an emotional outreach, I would say, is it's tough. It is really, really tough. And there's probably going to be times when you're doubting yourself, you're doubting your experiences, you're not quite sure where to go, but you know, you have to stick with it. You have to persevere. But it is tough going. The second thing is, I think, you know, exactly as you say, bringing in those new experiences, whether it's through recruits, whether it's through experts that you can buy in for a limited period of time, you need those catalysts to really come in and be seed points for change within the organization. I would say that some of the differences between more traditional thinking and much more kind of digital first thinking and digital culture, they're quite nuanced, you know, and even today I'm still learning things because, you know, the environment continues to change, the socioeconomic environment continues to change, or the younger generations that are coming through into the workplace are constantly changing in a very different perspective. So you need to be able to bring in those external perspectives that can help you with the really nuanced part of things. You don't always get it entirely from reading a book, watching a YouTube channel, or going to a conference. So bring in people, surround yourself with like-minded people that understand the journey that you're on, they can support you on that journey, and be brave, be bold.
Yeah, I love it. And yeah, I doubled down on that, on everything you said. Yeah, brilliant. And, you know, before the show, I actually forgot to mention and tell you about the flash round, but I'm going to tell you now. It's a flash round. Here we go.
Get a bit nervous.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun. So the flash round, Gary's going to learn about it now, but folks, you know about it. But if you don't, if this first time you're listening, the flash round is a bit more fun at the end of the show. We go into three questions. I ask Gary three questions. They, you know, sort of yes or no answers, nothing too dramatic. And then I give the man of the hour the mic and he asks me one question. Those are the rules.
Okay.
I didn't make them. Wink, wink. But that's how it goes. Okay. So here we go. So Gary, flash round for you. What is the best currency going forward? Crypto or fiat?
Fiat.
Okay. Where would you most like to hang out in the future? On Zoom or in the metaverse?
Metaverse. I can honestly say I am never far from my VR headset.
Oh, there we go. He's got it. Okay. So here we go. Then what would you like to do most on a Friday? Have an end of day beer on a Zoom chat or walk down to the pub and meet your teammates and have a drink there?
It's harder today than it ever was, but definitely go to the pub and, you know, have a beer with teammates. Absolutely.
Yeah. There we go. Relationships, folks, relationships. Okay, so there we go. I told you it wasn't that that hard.
That was okay. I was nervous. I must say my heart rate.
I don't stitch anyone up. It's all in the name of getting to know everyone, right? So, and you know, here we go. I'm going to give you the mic, my friend, and you go for it.
Okay. So yeah, my question on the spot, I guess, the pandemic has changed everyone's lives. And, you know, we're in this period of kind of post-pandemic growth now. Everyone's reevaluating lives and reevaluating career decisions. You know, it's been such an impactful change. Coming back to the very beginning, just when we're starting to realise things were locking down, was there any moment for you, Richard, where you stood and you looked around you or, you know, whatever, and you thought, things are going to change? And, you know, tell me about that moment if it existed.
Okay. Yes. I mean, firstly, it did exist. And I, you know, I'm going to tell you a funny story about this. It was over WhatsApp chat, not a colleague-to-colleague WhatsApp chat, but father-in-law sending me pictures of him stockpiling rice. He went up to the shops and he was going off and he was buying up everything you could imagine. I was like, okay, yeah. I think something's changing here. But to dig a bit deeper into that, I also realized very early on that the way it worked was fundamentally changing, as simple as that. I definitely recall moving very quickly, very, very quickly, everything, all my business online with inside, you know, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, everything moved digital. And I thought, okay, this is interesting. And what else? What else can I do to sort of, in a way, as an entrepreneur, take the best road and figure out the best opportunities off the back of this pandemic or recession, or this economic boomerang in a way. And I just went global. I mean, bam, let's go global. And that's incredible. And it's worked out pretty good, right? I really enjoyed the ride. There's a interesting world I'm living in right now, and my community evolves in, and everything's sort of moving on. But I honestly believe that for myself, as a business owner, I was looking for solutions, and the pandemic gave me some answers to those hard questions I kept on asking myself. And yeah, so here we are today, and I've already mentioned I've got a global community. I've got the show's doing pretty well. I've got my consulting business that's up and running and moving along pretty nicely. And yeah, I think in all honesty, with all the horrible things that went on, and I will say there was, you know, a lot of horrible things going on and not nice things going on, I always am an internal optimist, even now. Yeah, let's do it, right? So let's go out there and let's do it. We are innovators. We have to go out there and we have to innovate. And the more we innovate, the better the sound of the noise will be. So again, this is what we're doing right now as we go into some other sort of economic situation. What I'll say to folk out there, let's join the roadshow. Let's innovate together and let's have fun while we do it, right? And don't listen to the naysayers.
Well, yeah, definitely.
So yeah, a bit of a story there. But yeah, that's my story. And listen, mate, I mean, it's been an awesome show. So I loved going into the details. Some of those lived experiences were brilliant. As always said to my guests at the end of the show, how can folk reach out to you and get in touch with you guys?
Of course, yeah. So my LinkedIn is open. I think that tends to be where so many connections happen these days. I like to be out and about meeting people. So if I'm coming up to a conference or anything, you know, shout me if you're there. But yeah, reach out on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect. I'd love to talk more about your business, tell you more about my business. Yeah, relationships, you know, let's do that.
Yeah, agreed. And awesome. And I'll leave all the LinkedIn details on the show notes, everyone. So no need to scramble around looking for stuff. It's all going to be there. And again, awesome having you on the show. Looking forward to your continued success. And yeah, let's innovate together, mate.
Love it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.